I'm Michelle Shumate, and this is the Sustained Collaboration Podcast, sponsored by the Sustained Collaboration Network. I'm a professor, consultant, and researcher who's dedicated her career to studying and improving collaboration among social impact leaders. As a result of this work, I'm convinced that collaboration is an underutilized tool for making a bigger difference in communities. On this podcast, I'll be highlighting insights from recent case study research on nonprofit collaboration, available at sustainedcollab.org. On this episode of the podcast, I'm talking to initiative managers in the Sustained Collaboration Network. The Sustained Collaboration Network was launched in 2017 to promote structured collaboration among social impact organizations. Structured collaboration should result in long-term and permanent change to the business or operating models of two or more organizations. The Sustained Collaboration Network is made up of 8 community-based and 2 national funder collaboratives. Each of the initiative managers on the podcast today lead one of those funder collaboratives. What I really appreciated about this episode of the podcast is the stories that each of these initiative managers could tell about what it means to walk alongside nonprofit leaders and what's really needed from funder collaboratives in order to make sustained collaboration possible. I know that you're going to love this conversation. So I want to start with just asking each of you to introduce yourselves, maybe in the order you came into the room, just so that we can get your name and titles and those kinds of things. So
happy to lead off. Hi, I'm Nora Hanna. I'm the director of Arizona Together for Impact.
Hi, my name is Olivia Benson. I'm the chief operating officer at the Forbes Funds.
Hi, I'm Karen Lachelle, and I'm the executive director of Austin Together.
I'm Kate Pia Eckert, director of the Mission Sustainability Initiative at Forefront.
Wonderful. Thank you all for being here. The first question I wanted to kick off is that for 3 of the initiatives that are represented here, you're managing a pooled fund, right, to be able to support sustained collaboration. So can you talk a little bit about what are the benefits of creating a pooled fund?
I'm happy to jump in. You know, the sustained collaboration, what I have learned about it over these years is it's a little bit of a different animal, and it requires very specific skills in order to do it well and do it successfully. So having a program manager at every foundation who understands the technical pieces of doing this work would just not be feasible. And so the idea that, you know, in our case, having a dozen, you know, to 18 different funders pooling saves them the idea of having a program officer who is well-versed in this subject for just such a small niche area. They have me as sort of a contract program manager. Plus, it teaches the foundations themselves about collaboration, which I think is something that's really important.
Yeah, I think it really harnesses that power of collaboration to create more robust programs than any individual grantmaker might make on their own. And by working collectively, we can do more, as Nora said. It also creates a wall of confidentiality when that's needed between the organizations and organizational leaders doing the work and their general operating funders or other funders. Sometimes that confidentiality can be really important to beginning these conversations.
Wonderful. And so maybe we can transition to talking about receiving applications for sustained collaboration. From your positions, what are the factors that you might consider that you look at when you're evaluating these applications? And perhaps we can start with Olivia.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great question. I'd say, you know, on our end, we look at them a little differently. Obviously, you know, sustainability of the project is a goal. Partnerships that have been established, the work around the collaboration amongst the grantees, the goals, and then community impact. Community impact is really specific for us because we actually use and we partner with an external evaluator through a university that helps make essentially the final decision on whether or not these grants should move forward. And then they go to our board for approval. But it was really important to have that external lens outside of a funder's perspective to help us make that decision, because we aren't always all the experts, and those university partners are on the ground and looking at this from a public health lens too. So that, I say, would be really important for us, the community impact and definitely the sustainability of the project.
I'll just add, you know, our funding really starts pretty early in the process for these collaborations. You know, our first level of funding is to explore. And during our exploration process is really where we're asking groups to figure out why the collaboration should exist and who are the right partners to be a part of it. So sometimes folks come and they already have some of those pieces figured out, but sometimes they still have quite a bit of work to get through. And so we have to assess their readiness really to get into that kind of exploration and alignment of values, culture, and vision to really determine, do we think that this group and the folks that they're trying to work with and whatever structure it is really do have a shared vision that they would like to work toward? And do the boards of these organizations have the will and the determination to come together to explore the possibilities for what it could look like? So for us, it's really about, do we have an inkling that they're going to find that shared vision? And do we think there's the will from the leadership to really dig in and go deep to tease out the possibilities?
Yeah. And building on what Karen said, a lot of the work is startup. And, you know, we often give these tiny little grants, seed grants or micro grants, I think you call them, Michelle, to help them understand what the landscape is, what they would be getting themselves into before we go into a more substantial grant making process. So we really are trying to just build up the community and their awareness of this. And sometimes those small grants lead to, we're not ready. And maybe this isn't right for us, which is great, but it's all a learning process.
Yeah, I think for us, especially in those pre-exploratory and exploratory phases, success really is about learning. And so when we're evaluating those grant applications, it's looking at, does the organization have the bandwidth, the capacity, the planning in place to engage in that learning process? And also, is the proposal that they're looking for funding for going to support that learning process? And once we get into implementation, things become a little bit more straightforward, but certainly in the early phases, we're looking to set up the best possible environment we can for exploration.
Great.
And I wonder if you could just build on that a little bit and talk about, how do you end up in a pooled fund in particular evaluating grants? What does that look like? And maybe it's a little different in some of your initiatives that have multiple funders that are coming together. So can you tell me just a little more about that?
I would say it's challenging because, you know, it's very hard for the funders who are at the table, as well-intentioned as all of them are, to kind of take off the lens that they've been wearing with respect to their own grant making. And so they sort of, you know, we don't normally give to these types of organizations or this geography, and that's a challenge to get past that. But, you know, we have spent some time doing our own theory of change for our fund, and I just work to keep bringing people back to that piece of, here's why we're here, here's why we came together. Does this application meet that criteria? But I find that that's a big part of my role in this work.
Yeah, I second that. You know, each funder in our collective has their own grant-making priorities, but the reason they're part of the collective is because they want to be able to support collaboration outside of their traditional priorities. So it really is about creating consensus around our fund's grant-making priorities and bringing each application back to that rubric.
Yeah, we're set up a little differently, just in the sense that, you know, we have funders that fund Austin together, and then they kind of relinquish power over to myself and our board to really manage that application review process. So, you know, the research that we did before we started Austin Together really pointed toward, you know, centering nonprofit voices and centering nonprofit expertise and not really looking at funder-driven collaboration, because there's some data that shows funder-driven collaboration doesn't work. And our group, I think, has taken that kind of to heart. So we have our review process includes folks who are representatives from some of our funders, but also a lot of folks just from the community. And we're really just looking at those applications. And again, we think of our application process and the questions we ask really almost as a part of the process of what we are doing. And it is they are a stress test in and of themselves. So when we ask folks questions, it's not like we're looking for, you know, oh, are they going to pass the test? But it's giving us information about where they are in the process. And so oftentimes we then go back and forth in an iterative process to continue to ask more questions and also provide feedback or insights that our reviewers might have as to where they think there could be some stumbling blocks or maybe some questions they aren't asking that may end up becoming challenges down the road.
And Olivia, how does this work at the Forbes Fund? So you've mentioned the process of gathering all of this data and working with a university partner. How is it different when you're working with a single organization doing this work?
You know, I'd love if it was easier, but it's not. I think the great thing about the partnership that we have is that the university is able to pull together those, again, community stakeholders. So they're not just coming from within the university, but they're actually folks that have experience either doing similar work on the ground, leading work on the ground, or evaluating work on the ground. So they're able to give us their perspective and say, hey, you know, this is a really phenomenal thing. You should fund it. But before you commit to that funding, you should make sure they do their due diligence and check on this partner that is doing the same work across the city. So it's allowed us to have a different level of, I think, thoughtful engagement and funding into communities, trying to, again, really reduce the duplication. And it's been great for our funders that support us to do that work too, because we are able to say that, hey, this wasn't just a Forbes Funds led decision. This has been evaluated again through a community partner who has community partners that are bringing in their expertise to support this. So we think it's really good and can be impactful for the region.
The next question is really around thinking about leaders, social impact leaders, foundations who are thinking about maybe getting involved in this, and they might want to start something. They're thinking about a local collaboration, maybe a pooled fund, maybe going on their own. And so I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that process. What advice would you have for local leaders who are thinking about really embarking on this journey? And I'd actually like to start with talking to Karen, because you're closest to the beginning of that journey. And so I think you might have some really prescient advice.
Well, the folks who started Austin Together, I think, you know, really modeled a lot of the very things that we are actually looking for with our collaborations, which is to go slow and take your time and to really make sure that, you know, you're testing things out before you just dive in and make something happen. And so our group really did quite a bit of research around the country. And that's actually how we got involved with the Sustain Collaboration Network, and worked with a group of professors and students at UT through the RGK Center to help us really understand the landscape of collaboration first. And then we went and visited different locations to just try to gather as much information about what other people had done. So really taking our time to learn. And then really for the first several years of Austin Together, it was a test. It was a pilot. I mean, it was a lot of experimentation. We did not become our own organization. We were part of a donor advised fund, really in a mode of, we don't know for sure that we're going to do this. Let's make sure that there really is an appetite and a need, and that we really do have value that we can offer. And only when we're sure of that will we continue to move forward, look for additional funds, and look to really strengthen and expand what we're doing. So I guess my advice would be, make a lot of connections, learn a lot, really take the pulse on your local community and see where there are needs, make those connections and move slowly, and don't feel like you have to just jump in with some, you know, already baked idea, that it can be organic and you can build it as you go so that it's really customized to your community.
That's great. And Nora, I know that you do some presentations and some trainings for local leaders who are interested in potentially joining the Sustained Collaboration Network and introducing them to this idea. We don't have time for the full, you know, deck here, but I wonder if you could just briefly highlight some of the things that you think are really important that you share in that presentation.
I think there are a couple of reasons they like to be at the table, and I do share this with them. Something that I said earlier is, you're never going to have a program officer who understands the depth of this that you would need to. in order to be successful at it. The other thing is collaborations take so many different forms. They are not all of them. Like, there must be one nonprofit at the table, but sometimes I'm dealing with a nonprofit and a donor advised, fiscal sponsorship organization, or a for-profit and a nonprofit doing a collaboration. And to have those skills at your fingertips is a great opportunity for funders. And I've had a lot of corporate funders because they get quests from groups who are going through this and they can send them to me. So it's a nice handoff, I think, for a lot of funders. And when COVID hit, it was even better. They all rallied. They were all coming together around particular issues and wanted to support them. And sending them over to Arizona Together for Impact was just a great opportunity for them to say, we're supporting this and here's a resource for you. So I think it was fairly easy for them to get involved.
So we've talked a lot about the what and the how. I'd like to now turn to talk about the why. So much of the work that you do is around sustained collaboration. It might not be familiar to everyone, but I wonder if we could maybe talk about a few of the stories of different collaborations that you funded and to try to highlight some of the why in terms of this work. And so, Kate, I'd like to start with you. And particularly, I'm interested in maybe talking a little bit about the Lombard Villa Food Pantry and the Clothes Closet. And how did that merger end up creating a greater social impact in your view?
Yeah, I think what it does, when we talk about sustained collaboration, specifically mergers in the more corporate space, we think about efficiencies. And this is a prime example of how mergers can be an amazing tool for increasing impact in the nonprofit space, that it's not necessarily about efficiency, but about expansion, about serving the community more effectively. So in this case, there were two very small organizations that were both in facilities that were less than ideal, serving really similar communities, but with different services, one providing a food pantry, one providing a clothes closet, and some other needs. And they were able to combine their organizations, move into a space that's fully accessible, and now give their community members a one-stop shop for all of the services they need in a much larger purview. So more people are getting better service more easily. And that feels to me like a really great outcome of a collaboration.
Great. And I want to actually turn now to Nora, to a different kind of collaboration, which is really a more of an alliance around DEI among leadership organizations in Arizona. What kind of impact did that generate?
You know, that was really an interesting one. In Arizona, we have, 15, I think, different leadership organizations who are providing very similar services and training to audiences throughout the state. And they really weren't working together, even though there was so much similarity in terms of what they were offering to the folks who were going through their programs. They ended up forming a formal collaboration. And you know, back to one of your previous questions, you asked about how do we evaluate sometimes these applications. One of the things we did in this particular case is they had to very formally agree on where they were going forward, how they were going to manage this collaboration, and, you know, sign an agreement that they were in and they were going to do this. Because so often we find, particularly with these sort of looser alliances, they're just sort of coming together and it's not necessarily for a purpose and are fully committed. In this case, it was so that they could align around a program model. And the fact that it was DEI was great, but that was not the main thrust. The idea was, wait, all of these organizations are working together to create a program model that they could take to, you know, all their different audiences. And so in this case, it was a little bit of efficiency, but also impact, in that they had a higher quality product by working together to develop it.
Wonderful. And Olivia, could you talk a little bit about Kingsley and the way that the Kingsley Association worked with its tenants to do something maybe a little different, to figure out how to do shared marketing of all of the things that were going on in their location?
Yeah, Kingsley, I think for us is a great story. Kingsley, the building essentially, has such a presence in the community. And we typically, I don't think in the past we've funded a marketing consultant. So this was a newer one for us, but we really like the idea of the organizations coming together and saying, we are all doing wonderful things, but no one thinks of this as a one-stop shop. They might have, you know, an engagement with this entity and an engagement with this entity, but not necessarily knowing the full scope of just how the center can function, how the center functions, one, and then what space and opportunities are available for the community at large. So when this came to us again, it was newer, a newer model that we weren't really sure about, but we loved, because marketing as a shared support and shared back office is, again, not something you see come up. It's for us, you know, it's been HR or it's been accounting, but marketing and that storytelling is so important. And I think Nora said it earlier, you know, collaborations take many forms. And this was a form, I think, especially, you know, post-ish COVID, that we wanted to continue to see thrive, because that storytelling for nonprofits is so important. And then that shared cost for marketing, which sometimes feels very ancillary for folks that are in the weeds doing the work, is also important and should be considered as not only a way to better tell the story, but also to bring new stakeholders to the table.
Wonderful. And Karen, I would love for you to talk a little about the United Way of Greater Austin and Children's Optimal Health. This was also a merger, but a different kind of merger, a different kind of goal in setting it up. And so tell me about what kind of impact that's creating.
Well, I think that through Children's Optimal Health becoming a part of the United Way, it created a pathway for a lot of different stakeholders to come together to share data and exchange data in a way that had not happened before. And then also for the community to be able to then access that data themselves. So they were able to create this backbone model community that was a new structure that could manage the sort of the intake and the sharing of data in a whole new way. And they did it really rooted in centering the voices of those with lived experiences that would be most impacted by the data, and really brought in folks from a lot of different BIPOC-led organizations to create a pretty unique model that was really centering anti-racist practices. So kind of a little behind the scenes, something that a lot of people wouldn't see. It's not, you know, like two organizations that are now going to work together in a new way that the community would necessarily even know about. But for those of us that are familiar with data sharing, know that it's very complicated to get agreements and to have that structure. And it's very complicated to figure out how can you then use that data to drive outcomes for the community and give them access. And so I think they've accomplished something that they really wouldn't have been able to had they not come together for that level of sharing and really the sustainability of being anchored within the United Way.
Yeah, one of the things that I love in kind of reflecting on all these cases and getting to take a bird's eye view into all of your works is that sustained collaboration can be a vehicle for so much more than just efficiency. It can be scale. It can be shared storytelling. It can be gaining new capacity. It can be around how you tell the story of DEI in the state and go on a learning journey together, right? These are very different outcomes, but the tool that allowed them to get to those outcomes is really leveraging sustained collaboration. And so it's broadened my view, and I think it will broaden lots of people's view about why this is such an important tool for many social impact leaders to have in their toolbox. Last question I have for all of you is, what's the advantage of coming together as part of the sustained collaboration network? You could each do your own work individually in your own locations, but you've chosen to come together as a group of funders who care about sustained collaboration. So what's the advantage of joining this larger network, this larger movement across the country? Maybe we could start with you, Nora, and then we'll kind of make our way around.
Boy, I got to ramp up so much more quickly by leaning on the funds that had been around for 6, 7, 8 years before we started. And even beyond that, I got to tell you, I've learned so much from Karen and her group in Austin because they do it so differently. And so it's an eye opener of, boy, you know, you get stuck sort of in your ways and your habits, and to hear about ideas and concepts and events that they do that, you know, broaden their reach in their own communities has been great and really helpful to bring back to my work in Arizona.
Well, thanks for that, Nora. That's very kind of you to say. And I will say, you know, because this is a relatively new field, if we want to call it that, of work, it was very helpful to have peers across the country to affirm what we were trying to build and to be able to bounce ideas off of and to learn from. And I think we would have really waffled a lot more at the beginning. You know, when we started Austin Together, we really looked at Better Together in Dallas as a model, probably because they were so close to us and we felt most familiar since we're all in Texas. But the initial tools that we really needed to get started, we just basically borrowed from Better Together. And I think a lot of that, we've done a ton of sharing amongst one another. I think trying to really, again, sort of model what we believe in around sharing and collaboration. And I don't think any of us have any real ego or ownership over the things we're developing. We feel like these are tools that we should all be able to use. So I think it's an essential thing for us to have the network. And I think it'll be exciting when even more groups join and we have an even more diverse group of organizations across the country that just know, like, how are we supposed to solve community challenges without collaboration? I mean, when you really look at the data, when you really like just think from a common sense point of view, it's just so clear. We need organizations to be working together more and to have shared purpose and shared outcomes and more coordination. I think it's pretty unarguable that that'll lead to better outcomes.
Yeah, I think it's a great, you know, the Forbes One says a 40-year history as an intermediary foundation. And for where we are located, we're one of the few things in Pittsburgh that exists like us, let alone Southwest PA. And I think in the model that we've adopted of collaborative grant making for our partners and grantees, we need to practice what we preach, and having this national model is so important. The shared learnings, not just the best practices, but the just practices. And then also knowing that, you know, selfishly, like just because it, you know, failed in Pittsburgh, like this, something might work in another city, or something that, you know, has been adopted across the country might be something that we can bring here locally without necessarily the stumbling blocks and the time spent to build up that work, because we have a partner and a model that we can share, not only with grantees, but with consultants. So it's been, I you know, don't want to say invaluable or use that lightly, but I think it has been an invaluable opportunity for us to have in our back pocket and in our toolbox to say, like, we have national partners that are also seeing this and sharing in this work, and that we can learn from to, again, bring those not just best, but those just practices to the work we're doing here locally.
For me personally, having joined the Mission Sustainability Initiative just about a year ago, once it was already fully established, it's been incredibly helpful having thought partnership with folks doing this work around the country who, in some cases, have been doing it much longer than I have. And in a community with a robust philanthropic network like Chicago, there are a lot of people working on a lot of sides of this work, but no one else really focusing on sustained collaboration and how someone in my role can support that kind of collaboration the way that the other initiative managers are. So having this community of thought partners has been incredibly useful. But also, as Olivia said, I think being able to lift up the work happening at the national level and in geographies and cities across the country really gives, I think in some cases, it gives some credence and credibility to the work we're doing locally, either for funding partners that we're discussing it with, or even nonprofit leaders who think that they're, you know, way out on the edge in a new idea, but can say, oh no, actually, here I could talk about similar work that's happening in Austin or Dallas or wherever. And I think it gives them a lot more comfort that they're not going too far out on a limb. And I think possibly most importantly today, collaborating on research like this is hugely valuable. the level of research, the depth of research that we're able to do collectively is so much more significant than what the MSI would be able to do individually. I think it's a classic example of being able to do more and do it better together, but it feels really, really palpable today.
Well, thank you. And thank you for allowing me to be a part of that. So that wraps up our conversation today. I want to thank each of you for taking the time to share your wisdom and talents with us all. And we'll see you in the trenches back as we continue to work with sustained collaboration. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Sustained Collaboration Podcast. The Sustained Collaboration Podcast is a joint venture between the Sustained Collaboration Network and the Network for Nonprofit and Social Impact at Northwestern University. You can learn more about the Sustained Collaboration Network and download the research referenced in this podcast at sustainedcollab.org.